Rusty Quill presents.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at OnePeloton.com.
You want to join our troop?
You want to join our troop?
I do, if that's acceptable.
That's more than acceptable. That's fantastic. Let me be the first to officially welcome you to the Caravelle Traveling...
Out of the way! Molten glass coming through!
Hey, move your feet! You're standing on the hem of the General's coat.
What is death but the next stage in our paradigm?
I'm explaining it badly, aren't I?
This is all very different from what I was expecting.
For heroes are not meant to be forged through destiny.
Were you admiring my perpetual motion wheels here? I've got big plans for these bad boys.
For months now, I've been searching for a way to serve a greater purpose, and I think with you, I've found it.
Trust me, Leona. The troop is gonna love you.
Starfall, a fantasy audio drama. Find us in your favorite podcatcher today.
I think I understand that.
Hey everyone, it's Reg. Just dropping by to let you know we just released a brand new bonus episode for Hi and I. Remind me to tell you later, Noche Buena. A Christmas-themed episode where Mary recalls childhood Christmases, both mundane and magic. All our bonus episodes are available for supporters of the $10 at the tier and above at patreon.com/hyandipod. Supporters also get access to other audio, art, and video perks. It's the best way to support us and help us grow as a podcast, so sign up now. Maraming maraming salamat. Thank you so much.
You're listening to Hainai by Matsi Dapu. Episode 35.1. Paalam, Elaine.
So I found some pages torn out of what I think might be a journal. Elaine's journal, it seems like. I don't know if you got to read these, so I'll record them anyway. They're related to Jay's notes, the invisible ones. I hope you were prepared for just how many recordings I got through, Evelyn. I never thought I'd spend so much of my time recording my own voice outside my job. You got a nice drink? Are you sitting down? Do some stretches if you can. I know you've got that neck problem. Anyway, an entry from Elaine O'Donnell's journal. Undated. He's gone. He's gone. And I don't know where. Perhaps they finally got to him. Or he got away. But there's a reason we haven't heard from him. I don't know if I should go after him. After he left me his book, leather bound with a special ribbon that he said hid it away from prying eyes, and me with it. Trusted me to take care of it, to hide it. I don't know if seeking him out will put eyes on me, on us. Even gone, wherever he may be, he goes out of his way to protect me. I don't know what he wanted for us, if he wanted anything for us. What I do know is what he told me about this book of his, and the instructions he left along with him. I shared them with his officer friend, Dooley, and Peter, who's been kind enough to visit me and see how I've been doing after he noticed what I did. That Jay's disappearance lasted much longer than his usual long stretches of hunting leads for another case. Dooley told me about the last time they met, and how he received Jay's notebook days after that encounter. I did not tell him about the book, but I did share Jay's instructions. After I made the focus that would trap Bolden forever, so that neither of these young men could try and take the responsibility away from me. It's the least I could do, after everything Jay did for me. After what happened to me in Hyde, I was happy to live out the rest of my days in isolation. Let myself be the mad woman of a fallen town. Let myself live in the drug-addled state I spent so many of my years in. But thanks to Jay, I found my life again. I already owed him the thing. A small piece of it seemed a fair consolation. Together, we, Dooley, Peter, and I, buried Clifford Bolden in an empty grave in Mount Pleasant, and my focus with him. My favorite book from my own personal library. I thought it appropriate. And after that, together, we burned down Bolden's physical library. Dooley searched Jay's apartment before it could be taken over by his old landlord, and his things would be thrown out. He could find no clues as to Jay's whereabouts, and every time he reported it to me, I felt terrible about hiding the book from him. But I did what I thought was right. And as for Jay, well, we know nothing. We don't even know what happened to his cat, a little black beauty with yellow eyes. But she always seemed the capable sort, so I hope she's found shelter somewhere. Or perhaps Jay took her with him. It's a strange feeling to have a piece of your soul cut away. I don't feel as empty as I thought I might, but sometimes I feel something. An itch under my skin that I cannot scratch. A pricking of my ear. Trying to remember a song I have never heard before. Sometimes I think I might hear her voice. Lori's voice. I dream about her so often now. The times we spent playing together. When we were children. Sometimes we'd just about get lost in the forest nearby Hyde. And when we were there, I always thought, well, sometimes she'd say something, and I thought she was talking to me, but it was clear after a while that it wasn't me she was speaking to at all. When I think about it now, I think that perhaps Laurie had power long before he met the Puppet Master. Or in the very least, a gift that kept her from being entirely mundane. Maybe her insistence that she was special was simply the special thing inside her, begging to be acknowledged. I wonder if she might have turned out differently, if anyone knew how she felt. If there was someone who understood her, and did not simply give in to her every childish whim. I wonder if she could have turned out kind. I think about the Puppet Master sometimes, what they were like. They frightened me for so long. I was so convinced that they were the source of all our misfortunes, that they were the one who took my Laurie away. Turned her into the monster that she was near the end. But, knowing what I know now, thanks to Jay and the clarity he gifted me, well, I wonder what might have happened if I accepted their gift. If I became like a daughter to them, like Laurie was. Would I have found a doll that looked just like me in the basement of their city home? I know I shouldn't go back. Not without Jay. But I want to see her. One last time. I know. I shouldn't have gone back, but I did. Everything was as it was. My Laurie, undisturbed. And the automaton, William. I didn't dare touch a thing, but I got a closer look at the notes on the table. Dust-covered, barely readable, but I could make out more than I'd read the last time. William Savard II died in a fire decades ago, long before Hyde, long before I was born. In the familiar handwriting I had not seen in years, the doctor's handwriting, the Puppet Master. I read of how it was impossible to do for William Savard the Younger what they had done for others. How an automaton, no matter how intricately built, could not hold a human soul the way a human body could. Even the mangled perversion of one that the doctor so masterfully cut open and took over. How, even if it had been possible, that the doctor could not bring back those whose souls had already passed on to the other side. Because though what they did was an approximation of it, no human being, no matter how great their power, could truly bring someone back from the dead. Only gods. Only gods. They wrote of how they could not reveal this to their patron, or else risk his wrath and power falling upon them and their loved ones, but it seemed that they died long before this patron could hold them accountable for their deception. Whoever this patron was, well, I have a guess. The name gave it away. I recognize it from Jay's book. William Cornelius Savard. Savard Sr., the original leader of the Elders.
Please, Elaine, We're just trying to help people. We have someone who knows about these things. We're trying to stop people from getting killed, like what happened to your home.
Well, if you know everything about me, I'm sure you know why I can't just let you go. Let all of this go.
That's the thing. I don't know why all of this happened. I don't know why you made your own miasma. I guess your own focus. I don't know what this elder did to you, or why his books can magically kill people. But I know that you knew a man who tried to uncover the truth, like we're trying to do. That the book that we came looking for should have the answers. A way to stop the killings. Shouldn't it?
I suppose. I never read it.
What? But didn't you have it until, like...
Perhaps I read it later in life, but I made this place right after.
After?
You know, I knew a journalist. Perhaps you even know he faced elders and lived. But do you know what happened to him?
No, I don't.
Well, neither do I. He disappeared one day, a few months after saving me from Clifford Bolden, a few weeks after delivering his finished book of elders to me, asking me to keep it safe. I don't know if he was killed, but we, myself and his other loved ones, we believe that if he had been killed, we would have been next on the chopping block. But we stayed safe for years. His detective friend, Dooley, tried to find answers in his notes. It seems that whatever happened to him, it wasn't something he planned for. But he planned for many things, including a way to seal Clifford Bolden in his library, once and for all. It was a note he'd left in his book, a note not even Dooley saw, and it suited me fine. I only ever told him, and our young friend Peter, that we could burn his physical library down once I already underwent the ritual. I wanted to do this for him, because he did so much for me. It didn't take much. I just had to follow instructions and sacrifice a piece of my soul. As you do.
Oh, Lane. I'm so sorry.
You are, aren't you? Well, thank you, Evelyn. It's not all bad, though. In this place, I can be young again. I can be in control. And I can keep Clifford Bolden from harming others this way. And? If I do release my old, this part of me can pass on. I can hear it, like the ringing of a bell in the distance. I know my way home.
That's good. The fact that you did all of this without any magic of your own, that's really amazing.
Everyone has magic. The land has magic. The soul has magic. It's why the elders keep wanting to use them. But it's a comfort to know that nobody can take control of my soul but me. The best they can do is force it to pass on to the next life and use the explosion of power from fear and violent death, when a soul is rent from this world and forced into the next. But some have more magic than others. Blessed by the land, by chance. You'd hope those kinds of people have the good of others in mind, but that's not what happened to my Lori.
I know someone like that. Someone with more magic than your average person, but isn't an elder. Actually, I know two people like that, which is a weird coincidence.
Oh. And is your pyromaniac friend one of them?
Yeah. I'm worried about him, but I know he can take care of himself. We're just uninformed. It's why we came looking for the Book of Elders. Please, Elaine, the Benefactor, maybe even the other Elders, they're planning something big, and I don't know if we can stop it, but this might give us a fighting chance, maybe even to continue what Jay started.
Or maybe you'll disappear like he did.
It doesn't mean we can't try.
I know you mean well, but...
And if things go sideways, I promise to do what you did. Make the same sacrifice you did. You said you can tell if I lie. Am I lying now?
Well, all right then. I hope you have a better go of it than we did, Evelyn. Listen carefully. It took Clifford Bolden a good long time to realize what had happened. For when he awoke, he seemed to be in his own home, surrounded by his books, undisturbed. He began his morning routine after freshening up. He read a paper, catching up on world news. Called his assistant, gave her detailed instructions of what to get done, even before he arrived at the office the next day. Had her schedule a meeting with a board that he'd have to suffer through for a few hours, just to make them feel useful. And then he went to his library, cataloging his knowledge as he dug into the memories carried within foci that his colleagues had lent him. And in the middle of his library, on an enormous maple woodwork table, the unconscious body of the woman from whom he would extract the memory of Hyde, and a great conflagration of raw power that came from hundreds of souls passing into the next life. But when he tried to take from her the memory that he wished to immortalize, in his own words, in the skin-bound pages of a book, there was a great flash of light, and then darkness, and then, when he awoke, he seemed to be in his own home, surrounded by his books, undisturbed. He spent his time as always, read the paper, catching up on world news, called his assistant, gave her detailed instructions of what to get done, even before he arrived at the office the next day, had her schedule a meeting with the board that he'd have to suffer through for a few hours, just to make them feel useful. And then he went to his library, cataloging his knowledge as he dug into the memories carried within foci that his colleagues had lent him. And in the middle of his library, on an enormous maple woodwork table, the unconscious body of a woman from whom he would extract the memory of Hyde, and a great conflagration of raw power that came from hundreds of souls passing to the next life. I suppose he noticed that something was amiss when he wondered when it was, the last time his dear friend, James Callahan, came to visit him, wishing to read his books. The only man he would allow to look within the pages without being pulled into the death each carried. It was good for his ego, you see, for his words to be read by someone he so respected. And he tried to recall the last time James Callahan came to see him. He might have remembered a feeling of panic, of being found out, doing something he wasn't proud of, but not being able to remember exactly what or why. His friend. He was known, and he was understood. So why did he feel so afraid? The headache he experienced was piercing, like something sharp, lodging itself into his skull. He had never felt such pain before. Knives behind his eyes and in his head and in his back and... When he awoke, he seemed to be in his own home, surrounded by his books, undisturbed. He went to his library, cataloging his knowledge as he dug into the memories carried within the foci that his colleagues had lent him. And in the middle of his library, on an enormous maple woodwork table, the unconscious body of the woman from whom he would extract the memory of Hyde, and the great conflagration of raw power that came from hundreds of souls passing into the next life. He thought he saw something in the corner of his vision. The flash of red, like hair, pale skin, before it disappeared behind a shelf. Heard something he didn't expect to hear in such a lonely house. Bare feet. That he was being haunted, at least by something or someone that he did not already know about, seemed impossible to consider. Him. For any elder to feel so bedeviled, beggared belief. And yet, he looked to the woman on the table, pale, red hair, once bright, though faded dark over time, with streaks of white run through, more from stress than age, as with the lines on her face. A woman who had seen horror and survived, in contrast with the memories of the dead he so often recorded with his foci. Then, a clattering sound, like something falling onto the wood floor, up above on the second floor landing. He used a spell that he learned from Richard Henry, and sent the hand and eye, made of magic, to investigate. But on the second floor, all he found was a puppet, a little wooden nutcracker that he'd never before seen. But his fear was palpable when he recalled the last time he'd seen such a puppet. Well, any puppet at all. He thought that somehow the long-dead puppet master had survived, returned for retribution. He locked his library up so that nothing could get in. And he began to put up spells of protection that he learned from his days among other elders, developed, he remembered, by Marianne Weeks of Savard's Inner Circle. He did so vie for a position like hers, but if these protections held, there was no denying that she had earned her place tenfold. And yet, even with the spells, he heard them again. Running footsteps, saw the flash of red, and when he looked at the table, When he awoke, he seemed to be in his own home, surrounded by his books, undisturbed. He went to his library, cataloging his knowledge as he dug into the memories carried within foci that his colleagues had lent him. He began to find signs of someone else in his home. A doll, lovingly made by hand, with bright red hair and green eyes, laid out on his pillow when he investigated the bedroom. A brightly wrapped cream egg on the table in his dining room. Sketches of anatomy, flesh bodies, guides of dissection, elaborate pictures of muscle and sinew that move joints in the arm, laid out on his work table, where the woman's unconscious body should have been. And then, music, playing in his den. Tchaikovsky, drifting from his record player. And when he awoke, he was... It took him many attempts to realize what was going on, or at least, what he could make sense of. He tried lashing out with his magic. He tried to get out. He tried to destroy my body whenever it was in his presence. But for all his power, his awareness, his consciousness, could only exist because of me and the world I wove around him. I don't know how time works here, but it must have felt like decades for him. Over time, he learned to change the space in which he existed, and his library became a wondrous thing. I think it made him happy to be able to shape things in the image he wished to shape them. But still, the desire for freedom gnawed at him. Because he didn't deserve this. He didn't deserve to be trapped here, forgotten. He spent quite a lot of time thinking about what he deserved, that man. His thoughts and feelings blended into mine, and he tried so very hard to appeal to my good graces. He crooned and cajoled, he begged and pleaded. He threatened and fought and apologized, but I was ever silent. As silent as the body that laid unconscious on the table. Clifford Bolden spent much time writing about the thoughts of others, observing, cataloging. His thoughts, his memory, his ego. His stories, not theirs, in the end. And now, his own story, the story of Clifford Bolden, could not even be written by his own hand. And that's something he can't abide by, it seems.
A letter from Elaine O'Donnell, addressed to the journalist, Jay. I'm glad I met you, Jay. If it wasn't for you, I never would have learned how much I love romance novels. The ones you told me were awful, even when you got me new ones from the used books whenever you came to visit. The look on your face. The way you scrunched up your nose like it was the most offensive thing you'd ever seen made me laugh every time. I'm sure it would offend you to learn that I imagined such a whirlwind romance for you. Sometimes, I pretend that you've gone away to a sunny place, met a beautiful woman, or man, or whomever caught your fancy. I started writing a while back. Something to pass the time in between my job at the corner store. Awful, tawdry little stories. I know that if you did read them, you'd hate every second. But you'd read them anyway, because I wrote them. I even got them published, with a small press that only sells local, but would you believe it, they got a following of their own. I got some fans writing into me, thrilled to learn that I was living in Toronto, apparently under the impression that I was some mysterious big-shot writer from America or something. I started having these little meetups at the library, got asked to teach some writing workshops, met some lovely people. Dana, Charlie, Ahmed, Gurley. They seemed mystified to know a real-life author. It became part of my routine. Got to see the regulars, got to meet people, got to keep writing. My agent treats me like a silly old aunt, a humorless, pinched-faced young man who has premature grays, but he's terribly sweet under all that. Oh, and guess what? I named the love interest after you. Well, the name you gave out to others. James Callahan. Just to add insult to injury. That's what you get for disappearing. You don't get to provide input. I don't mean to go on, but I wanted you to know that I'm doing well. I hope that you get to read this wherever you are. I hope that you're safe and happy and maybe even in love. I imagine that I won't see you again. And even now, it's hard for me to bring your face to mind without looking at the one photo we took together. Except, of course, your scrunched-up look. The look of judgment on your face will always stay fresh in my memory, you literary elitist, you. I didn't get to have a family the way I expected to when I was young. But I had you. Moreover, I have a life now. Something that I love to do. Friends, a community, and something to look forward to every day. Nowadays, people don't think of me as a survivor of a horrific tragedy. They think of me as a moderately successful romance novelist, and a bit of a teacher at the local library, and maybe even a friendly face at the counter, where I work my day job. I have a life, a happy life, that I get to live on my own terms. And I only hope that you have that too. I hope this letter finds you well, if it's ever sent. All my love. Elaine. I can hear them now. The calling, the distant bells. I suppose it'll be nice to rest, finally. Good luck. Don't forget what I told you. And be well, Evelyn.
Thank you. Bye, Elaine O'Donnell.
You're listening to Hainai by Motsi Dapul.
Hey everyone, it's Motsi. Just this week, Israel attacked Rafah and killed at least 74 civilians. Rafah was designated a safe zone for approximately 1 million fleeing Palestinians. The current death toll in Palestine is now almost 29,000, not including those missing and presumed dead. Some photos and videos from the attack have gone viral, including one of a young girl whose legs were blown off, and people finding pieces of bodies such as a dismembered foot in the wreckage. Continuing pressure on world leaders is top priority, as it's led to Canada, Australia, and New Zealand to call for a humanitarian ceasefire. Keep protesting, keep calling, keep making your voice heard, because we can't stop until Palestinians are safe from unrelenting bombardment, and until Israel stops killing children. eSIMS for Gaza is the only way for some Palestinians to connect to loved ones, or for medical staff to communicate. So please donate eSIMS if you can. It's easy, and we've linked a tutorial in the description. We've also linked other humanitarian groups delivering relief to Gaza, even despite Israeli protesters blocking relief from entering Gaza. Please stay safe, everyone. Ingat. And as always, thank you. We love you. And kalayaan para sa Palestina.
Martial law and the crimes of the Marxists. In January of 1980, under the peak of his father's rule, Bongbong Marcos was elected into his first formal position in government as vice governor of Ilocos Norte province. He was barely 23 years old. Bongbong made himself busy in his first year in office by being absent. He went to school in the United States at the Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania. He did not earn any degree there, despite his regular insistence that he did. Despite the clear negligence of his duties, Bongbong won the 1983 elections, this time as governor of the province at 26 years old. It seems that the pressures of a high position were lost on him as he continued to be absent from office. The only times he was seen in Ilocos Norte was to fly in and out of it, and it was his vice governor, Roque Eblan Jr., whom residents and public officials would mostly see. Marcos Jr. was often seen, however, driving flashy cars, attending extravagant parties, and traveling abroad for leisure. He made no effort in hiding his wealth and was in fact prone to flaunting it. In 1985, Bongbong Marcos sat as chairman of the board of the Philippine Communications Satellite Corporation, or PhilComSat, receiving a monthly salary of anywhere between $9,700 to $97,000. Sources of a United Press International reporter said that Marcos Jr. had no duties in PhilComSat and rarely even went to their office. In 1986, Philippine government auditors would discover that PhilComSat was one of the many corporations and organizations used to siphon ill-gotten wealth out of the country. In a 2021 interview, former Ilocos Norte governor and first district congressman Rodolfo Rudy Fariñas was quoted to say, "When Bongbong was governor, he did not give anything to the province. We can't deny that their father had done a lot, but the children have done nothing."
Hey everyone, this is Motsi Dapul, creator, writer, and producer of Hainai. Hainai is a podcast produced by myself, Reg Helly, Yoy Halago, and Alyssa Jimenez, and licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike 4.0 International License. This episode was co-produced by Jesse Goodsell and written and directed by me. I also play the roles of Maddie Datuin and Elaine O'Donnell. The role of Evelyn was played by Natalie. If you'd like to chat with other listeners when this episode goes live, we do a live premiere every other Sunday at 9 p.m. EST or Toronto time on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/HainaiPod. To help support the production of Hainai, you can subscribe to our Patreon, patreon.com/HainaiPod. You'll get to be part of our early access program, where we release episodes 3 days early on Thursday at 9 p.m. EST or Toronto time. You can also get bonus audio, art, video, and many, many more. Speaking of Patreon, we'd love to give a shout-out to the following patrons for their amazing support. Victoria Goodwin, Pablo Neurotic, Melissa, Megan, Malaya Light, Evie Smith, Danny, Astra Kim, and Jesse Goodsell. If you can't subscribe to us monthly, You also have the option to buy us a milk tea on Ko-fi, ko-fi.com/hainaipod. Our ad-free Hainai album, which has our official music and full episodes from Act 1 and 2, is also available in both Patreon and the Ko-fi store. Check out our website, hainaipod.com, for more information. And for news and updates, don't forget to follow us on our blog, hainaipod.tumblr.com, as well as our socials on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, at hainaipod.com, that's H-I-N-A-Y-P-O-D. Hainai is available on Acast and wherever you listen to podcasts. We hope you enjoy our Act 3 episodes, and as always, thank you, we love you, and hanggang sa muli.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.